Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Yes, we are back. I mean, we're back.
Yeah. Some other facets of Auburn are not quite back yet.
Well, not quite. not even close. Same song, different verse. Yeah. This past weekend, as Auburn goes to Columbia, Missouri, and plays pretty well enough to build an 11-point lead, and a golden opportunity to add to that and pretty much put the ball game away late in the third quarter. But once again, Auburn found a way to, you know, avoid victory.
That's really the perfect way to frame it, isn't it?
Everyone associated with that is associated with, follows, covers anything Auburn football is frustrated beyond words.
I mean, we're talking about one of the worst stretches in more than 70 years.
Yes.
And that's not good. Going back to the 1946 to 50.
That's exactly right. That is the only stretch in Auburn football history that has been worse than the one that Auburn is in right now.
And that's not what you want to be compared to anything.
Oh,
and,
absolutely not. Absolutely not.
There's not one big villain to blame for all this. I mean, there's lots of things that went wrong over the past 3 years, and there are a lot of things that are going wrong each and every Saturday this fall.
Each and every week. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill. That's Brian Matthews. Dan is in the building. He'll be in just a second. Drew is behind the controls here on the Monday edition of The Drive. We'd love to hear from you. Get your thoughts. Go ahead and get the frustrations out. Now at 2-5, it's not statistically, it's not impossible, but now it appears that Auburn is not going to be able to, to make that step forward. For Auburn to make a bowl game now, it would be pretty amazing. Auburn would have to win four of their last five bowl games.
Yeah, they'd have to get
to be bowl eligible.
A real roll and pull some upsets.
And how could you imagine that when you haven't been able to close out ball games? Hugh Freeze today. Talking with the media, talking once again about, Auburn's inability to finish. He said, he's always been pretty brutally honest.
Yep.
And he said a couple of things today that I have said this a few times before, but once again, Hugh Freeze with a couple of comments today that I don't know that I've ever heard other coaches make when he was talking about playing not to lose.
Yeah.
As opposed to playing to win, and saying, "And we've been coaching, and
he's feeling the pressure too, just like the players."
Absolutely, but I mean, and that is something that you're not going to win most of the time if you're playing not to lose.
That's true, and he talked specifically about the first and 10 to start the series on Missouri's 37-yard line with 5-something left in the game.
Right.
When Auburn had that drive to put it away. And his intuition, his thoughts.
His instinct
is the word. Let's take a shot.
Let's go deep. Let's see if we can beat them, put it away, put them away, beat them deep.
Yep.
But then he thought, well,
based on what he's seen all season,
an incomplete pass is going to put him in second and 10, right. So give the ball to 27.
Right.
And then there's a blown assignment or two, and Jarquez has no chance and loses two, and then you end up, you know, it's getting yourself out of field goal range.
And I don't blame Freeze for being conservative there, because we talked for a whole week how if he had been more conservative in the Oklahoma game, that maybe they would hang on and win that. And he tried that against Missouri, and it didn't work either.
Right.
So it's just, you know.
It does seem like, you know, whatever they do is wrong.
Yep.
And
there's a buzzword we use. Hi, everybody.
Dan.
There's a buzzword we use sometimes, especially in the offseason. I stumbled on this during the Observer podcast. What is the identity of the Auburn offense? Like, what are the things Auburn's offense does well consistently with no caveat, with no – because I would think
– I don't think there is anything they do consistently well.
Yeah, and that's – and I think there – and I would say not to point the finger solely at Peyton Thorne by any means, and not to call for a quarterback change, because I have no reason to believe it would be better with Hank Brown, and Walker White is not on the travel squad, did not go to the Missouri game, we're coming off a bye week. It's not, I mean, that guy's not going to play. I mean, this season
he wasn't going to play.
I saw where our buddy
Jason Caldwell has said, it is what it is right now, and go ahead and show everybody what you've got.
I would say don't go on a hunger strike waiting for Walker White to go in the game this season, because I don't know.
If you decide, and I'm talking your Hugh Freeze and the Auburn staff, if you decide, all right, we're going to scrap everybody upper class, and Hank Brown's the guy, and it doesn't work with Hank, then I would think Walker would be the next one.
I would think those things would need to happen first, though.
Yes.
And we'll see if they decide to do all of those things first. But when you're not bringing a guy on the road after the bye week in week 7, I would think he's probably not in the immediate plans.
Not in the plans.
Yeah, I would say he's not. I would say it's fair to describe
him as... He wasn't in the plans.
I would say that, yes, as of game 7, he wasn't in the plans. Now, getting back to my original point, like, not to point the finger solely at Peyton Thorne,
I don't think many fingers needed to be pointed there for this game.
But I would also say, generally speaking, your identity as an offense should be, what are the things your quarterback is really good at? And that's a question where I would say, where would you say Peyton's game is above average relative to college quarterbacks that you see? And that's where I'm trying to be as fair as possible to the guy. And you could say, well, back in 2021, he won 11 games at Michigan State, and he's the same quarterback he was then. You know, it's a different situation. Auburn is clearly not trying to run. I mean, that offense had a running back go for 2,000 yards. Mm-hmm. Right, like, Auburn's clearly not doing the 2021 Michigan State offense to bring whatever it was out of Peyton Thorne that helped him win 11 games in the Big Ten 3 years ago. But I would say one of the problems with the offensive identity is it's tough right now to identify a trait where your quarterback is above average.
I would argue with that and say I don't think there is a quarterback. There are many quarterbacks that would have a lot of success with the offensive line that Auburn has Auburn has put out there right now.
Auburn's
tackles have been atrocious.
Yeah.
I mean, atrocious. You saw for the second straight game, opening play is a sack. And Hugh Freeze was talking about it today. I mean, it's a quick pass called. It's one where the ball is supposed to come out immediately, but the ball can't even come out immediately when the defensive end is there as the ball is getting there.
And the place where we agree with these points is that it all gets back to, you had an offseason to establish an offense that can do things well. And here we are in week 7 trying to identify places where Auburn's offense is consistently good or Auburn's quarterback play is consistently above average.
My feeling is, hey, this team, the talent on this team is not worse than 4 of the 5 teams they've lost to. And what you generally hope and expect from from your coach is to find ways to win those games when the talent is at least equal. And I feel like that's been the problem.
Especially when a coach is as involved on one side of the ball or the other as this coach is. Now, if he's a CEO with two fully delegated coordinators, it's a little bit different. But when he's as involved, and when it's the side of the ball where
how about this?
Auburn's offense has had five games against major conference opponents this year. You could say four of them were games where Auburn had a good shot of winning.
Yes,
and I don't think
absolutely could. And did you score? Did you score more than 20? And how many of those games?
And how about this? I don't think you could say Auburn's offense played winning football in any of the I would say it coming out of the game. Like what's the game where you think Auburn's offense played good enough to win and didn't do it? Oklahoma. I mean, how many points did you score? And you threw a pick six at the end. I don't think that's. I mean, and what's frustrating about Missouri is that just like Oklahoma, you've got the play. I mean, when Auburn went to the air against Oklahoma after the Jarquez run, up 11, we got the same text message, and people were thinking it that you just blew your chance to salt the game away by being over aggressive and trying to keep scoring instead of playing the clock. Remember?
Right.
I think a lot of the people watching, and you probably needed to stay aggressive against Missouri because you weren't going to be able to play the clock that late.
I mean, I got a couple of texts from people that just lost their minds when Auburn threw on first and goal from the 10-yard line. I mean, I can't imagine being upset when you make that call and you've got the guy there and there's a perfect pass.
But when you don't,
and it's a touch. Well,
sure. No. I'm not blaming the play calling or the quarterback necessarily.
But I did. I got two separate ones saying fire him right now for making that call.
Wow.
And I thought he made a call that should have won the ball game right there.
Yeah.
That was a call that should have won the game.
But the moment that play doesn't happen.
Oh, in hindsight, yeah. Right. You find me a coach that can go and like, okay, we're not going to run that play. We're going to run another one.
No, but the moment that play doesn't happen and the moment that series goes backwards and results in 0 points, aren't you feeling like you did against Oklahoma where it was like you just had a chance?
Oh, yeah. I felt like that was a golden opportunity.
To win the game.
Yes, and then when you miss the field goal and then they hit the 78-whatever-yard pass, it's like, oh, here it goes. Was there any Auburn fan who thought, that's all right, we're going to hang on and win?
Brady Cook was going to go full Kurt Schilling.
They were going to win the ball game then.
Willis Reed.
And the sad thing is I feel like the players and the coaching staff felt the same way. Like, oh, crap, here we go again. We're going to lose. I don't know how you get out.
Bill, I don't know if you've heard the Observer podcast. I told a story about you. And it's when I thought of you when Eugene Asante talked about the notion that the focus was lost on the sidelines up 17-3. He saw early celebrating and too much relief for a game with that much time left. And it made me think of when you have a player or a team doing well and someone lets you know in the middle of the performance.
Oh, yeah, there's one.
I said one of Bill.
He knows it. He's listening. He knows.
So no, but just in general.
We're playing great. It's like it's not over yet.
Yes, in any sport, I would say, especially in fantasy baseball with a pitcher. But yeah. I'd say with your favorite teams too. But if an Auburn pitcher is throwing really well through 4 or 5 innings, I don't think you want a text message from anybody about how great this guy looks and how great things are going, because often. Who knows? But hearing Asante talk about the loss of focus on this, and I could understand the relief those guys probably started to feel, thinking they were finally going to win a conference game and it was on the road and everything. But I mean, you look at Auburn's offense after, and yes, the touchdown play should have happened. But you look at Auburn's offense, and
from that point on, it was atrocious, because Peyton Thorne, before that incompletion, was having an outstanding ball game.
He was 1 of 6 in the fourth quarter.
And think about that, and at the end of the third quarter is when that happened. Yep. So I mean, he was like 16 for 19, I believe. 16 for 19 before that pass was dropped and was going to be, would have been 17 for 20 for about 190 at that point.
Let me see. I got it right here.
Yeah. I mean, and then it was like, but from that, you know, once Missouri started coming on, they got aggressive defensively. And I mean, Peyton felt the pressure, and there was pressure from that point on.
He was 3 of his last 8.
Yeah. Okay, so he was 17 to 27, so he was 14. Yeah, 14. That's right. 14 for 19, and there was a drop. That's right. Yep, that's exactly right. So, I mean, it was...
Wait, hold on. I don't think
I would posit, too, that Brady Cook's return gave the Missouri defense a boost.
Three of his last 11, I'm sorry.
Like, I think again,
Yeah, so 14 for... He was 14 for 16. Think about that. 14 for 16.
Before, well, when the drop happens? And then he's... the numbers...
29, so that would be 14 of...
18. Yeah, yes, 14 of 18.
And Auburn doesn't really...
That's terrific.
Yeah,
on the road, in the SEC.
No kidding. Yeah.
And Auburn doesn't really run the ball after that either. So it's really, I mean, it's a different offense after.
And Missouri made it tough for Auburn to run the ball.
Yeah, Auburn.
I mean, that's one thing people were like, got to run it. And they tried, and they averaged about 3 yards a rush.
No, this was, I mean, Auburn seemed to go into the game. Although I know there was a sack on the first play, but Auburn seemed to go into the game thinking the running backs and especially Jarquez would touch the ball more and get the ball more. I mean, Auburn throws. Three passes to running backs on top of the carries, too.
Yeah, Jarquez had almost 50% more touches in that game than his average. His production, though, went down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn carry, you know, runs 3.5 a carry. Yeah.
You know, they recognize the best part of the offense. They run the offense through that player more, and then he gets less.
Well, I mean, Eli Drinkwitz and those folks have access to the comments everybody's making, too. Mm-hmm. Not just you know, fans, mm-hmm, and the media. Hugh Freeze said, we got to get it to 27 more.
And Auburn, but they focused on 27. I think your statement on the offensive line play in that game just sums it up.
Yeah.
That was it.
Well, Auburn's running game, I mean, even though I know Auburn picked up a couple of third and ones, although and that's something else, too. I mean, Auburn's 4-14 on third down, and two of the four conversions are third and one. So I mean,
yeah.
So when,
yeah,
so
one, when, of, one of them, the little Malcolm Simmons.
Yes, yeah. So there's a couple of third and one pickups, but other than that, I mean, Auburn. It was whenever Missouri could get into, you know, when Missouri's defense needed to get off the field, they did, and so
yep.
That's
oh my goodness, that last drive was so painful. It was excruciating. I mean, Auburn defensively had been doing what they needed. Offensively, even when they pinned them, after they pinned them back to the one, they stop them. They get the ball, great field position. Again, they get the run blown up on first down. They have to punt again, but still, Missouri is at the five. And I mean, you just felt it. You just felt, all right, here we go. It's gonna be another ridiculously long, and it was 17, 18 plays, 95 yards. Yep. And I mean, there was a third and 18 along the way. There was a fourth and six.
Two of the third downs.
Yeah.
It was just mistake after mistake after mistake.
And the defense
said that he felt his players on defense
were gassed. But they were gassed because they couldn't get off the field on that series. Because how many plays did Missouri run?
Until then, not a lot.
Not many. I mean,
especially Auburn had forced, I think, was it? Maybe not three and outs, but let me see the last two drives before that.
The one from the 1 yard line was
a five play drive and a three and out.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, so look at the total plays for Missouri. How many total snaps did they get?
They got total plays.
Now Missouri's offense did grab some momentum after the 17-3.
They had 75 total plays.
So they ran 57. They'd only run 58 plays until then. So I mean, the Auburn defense wasn't tired at the start of that series, but the fact that it went 17 plays, sure, they were gassed by the end.
That was the other Auburn drive where it felt like when Auburn goes up 17-3, if Missouri goes down and gets a field goal on the resulting drive, that's another one where you feel like, oh, a three and out here or a big stop by the Auburn defense here, and it's kind of a dink and dunk, and there's I think the 12th man on the field play is on that drive. You know, there's a substitution penalty, and Missouri's able to get a field goal that keeps their hopes alive. You know, if you get the ball back up 17-3, you know, it could be off a punt, could be a different chance. But it's just on top of
every game, it's whatever could have been didn't happen.
Struggling to find
so many different things. It's not always the same thing.
And there are some silver linings. I keep thinking younger players on defense are suggesting that they're, you know, if they want to stick around, they could be foundational parts of the team for a while. Although the first part of that sentence is really important, isn't it, Bill?
I mean, there are no guarantees and Hugh Freeze even said it.
Remember Tony Bennett.
Did it not seem like, I mean,
he mentioned recruiting his own roster again a week ago.
He said something similar. He was going for a while on things that I felt like he's reminding me of, you were talking about Tony Bennett, he was reminding me of all the things that you have to do and that you're up against and the pressure and recruiting your own roster. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yes, and it's just getting worse. It, I mean, this losing is making it worse, yeah. You know, every single day.
That's why I feel like they don't need to make any crazy changes. They don't need to throw all the veterans in the pile and try to play all young players. They need to fight for every possible win they can get.
They need to just get a win.
Yes.
They have needed to get a win for the last 5 weeks. I mean, it's like it's getting more desperate each week.
Yep.
And the last you need
to get a win before there's a loss so bad you start to worry about effort.
Yeah,
I would say that's because.
But I don't care if, I mean, if the effort's there and you go 2-10, then what? I mean, if you got guys that are just fighting their guts out, and you still lose to Vandy and to ULM, but you're fighting hard and you're still making critical mistakes.
But
what have you accomplished?
I would say when you start to worry about the effort on the field, or when the coaching staff, if the coaching staff starts to worry about the
every
effort,
loss, you've got to worry about it more.
And I'd say that's when a youth movement becomes, because that's when you could start to see, not wholesale, but you could start to see guys getting into position in places
they're playing a lot of freshmen now. That there's some that, you know, that probably, or I'm sure, would like count to be playing more.
You got a snap count for Perry on Saturday, because that was that was something I was a little.
Perry Thompson.
Yeah,
I can pull it up real quick.
I mean, I know that was one where you thought maybe you'd see more 8-3-11 off the bye week, and again,
yeah. My question is, so who sits?
I know. It's a tough one to.
He's still working at the same position Keandre Lambert Smith is,
and he's still, you know, one of your most outstanding players.
He's had eight snaps.
Yeah, 8 snaps, and Hugh Freeze mentioned him today that he's had a couple of really good practice weeks. Well,
Keandre had 51 snaps.
Yeah, Cam had quite a few.
Cam 45. Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's working behind the same position as Keandre Lambert Smith. Feels a little flimsy because it feels like you can move Lambert Smith around if you had a guy behind him who needed to be on the field.
I guess. I don't know how much Keandre's practiced it at inside.
That's
though.
True. That's
what you're talking about.
Simmons only had 15 snaps, which is kind of surprising. Robert Lewis, 37 at receiver.
Simmons was one of the more efficient players on the team using some of the advanced stats.
Well, that's because when he's in, he gets the ball. All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
Oh, yeah. We are right back with your phone calls here on the Monday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney.
502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. Let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Yellowhammer gets us started. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So here's my take on things. When Malzahn left, our line of scrimmage on defense and offense was kind of nothing special. And Harsin did nothing to fix it. And so Freeze has done some good recruiting, pulling some players in, but we're still under construction. It's just not there yet. And until and unless we can get together an offensive and defensive line of scrimmage that is on par with everyone on our schedule, and that's still no guarantee, but without that, you're guaranteed to have what we've got.
I don't disagree with what you're saying there, Yellowhammer. The thing is, Auburn's 2-5, and four of those five losses, I feel like Auburn's on par with those teams. You would hope
you would
hope that you're splitting games. If you're playing four teams that you have equal talent with, shouldn't you at least win half of them? Shouldn't you win the ones at home? Auburn hasn't been able to win any of those. That's my biggest concern. I don't doubt that the talent is improved over a year ago. And it looks like it is continuing to improve. I just don't know that you can count on this very highly ranked recruiting class if you don't win some ball games.
Well, you guys and your guest, when Freeze was first hired, were saying this is going to take several years to dig out of this.
Yeah, but when Auburn won six games last year, and you looked at the talent that they had brought in, I don't think it was pie in the sky, stars in my eyes, thinking this Auburn team ought to win 7 or 8 ball games.
Yeah,
and they ain't going to touch that.
I think people thought it would take several years to get back to the SEC championship game.
Yes, but competing for titles.
But no, I don't think you get several years to get back to the middle of a conference anymore in college football. If you're lingering near the bottom for the first 3 years of your tenure, I think at most places that's it. Like that's where you're going to be, unless there's, you know, real reason for optimism in year four. I said that coming out of the Arkansas game. I don't like talking like this, but the fact is, if you know, Hugh Freeze is probably going to go under 500 in conference play for the second year, and if he does it again next year, you're going to have to make a really, really interesting case for him to get a fourth year.
I don't see how he gets a fourth year. I just don't. I think with the transfer portal and everything going on,
the opportunity is there.
Right. You don't get 4 years to get back to 4-4 in conference play at most places in the league anymore. Especially when you see coaches that are turning it around immediately. I mean, Cignetti's 6-0, right? And Indy 7-0.
7-0.
I picked Nebraska in that game.
Yeah.
And how wrong was I?
Nick Saban.
How close was I? How'd I do there? How about and don't look now? Deion Sanders is 6-2 in a conference.
Keep picking against them
and a Big 12 genuine Big 12 championship contender in his second season in that league. So no, I don't think you get several years to get back to the middle of a conference anymore.
Well, several years to get off the bottom, right? I mean, it's just wow.
Well, that's pretty much nothing I can argue against.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, it is. It's really tough. But I mean, the truth is painful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's 16 teams in SEC right now. Auburn is 15th or 16th, right?
Auburn's tied for 15th.
Does anybody want to argue that point?
Yeah. No.
I mean, Kentucky's a big game for, you know, 14th, 15th, and 16th, I guess.
Yeah, Auburn
Kentucky's
gets to
1-4 in conference.
Auburn gets to argue that there's at least one team that belongs behind them on Saturday.
Yeah. You know, Mississippi State's been pretty bad, yeah.
Mississippi State's getting better.
Yeah.
State is – they had struggled offensively. They are getting better. They've scored 55 points in their last two conference games.
If Oklahoma –
it takes Auburn four conference games to score that many points.
If Oklahoma hadn't won at Auburn, you'd have them.
Yeah.
Near the bottom, right? Yep. I mean, you probably still do. Like, yep. I mean, they're probably still genuinely a bottom four, bottom five team in the league right now, and that's making an offensive coordinator change midseason too. By the way, over at Oklahoma after the loss on Saturday, but no, you know, the way it seems to work now, Brian. I'd be interested to know if you disagree as someone who sees rosters change and follows this recruiting thing really close. Like when you inherit a situation Hugh Freeze inherited. Or that's similar, and that's the other thing, the mess that Hugh Freeze inherited is a mess that a lot of coaches inherit now, because a lot of kids leave after the previous coach leaves, and you inherit a barren roster, and it doesn't take. I mean, is it worse than what Josh Heupel inherited at Tennessee in the middle of the Jeremy Pruitt scandal when they had 40-something players and they had to totally reshuffle things?
This roster is more than 80% made up of players that Hugh Freeze has brought in.
A lot of what happens in year one is the previous coach's fault.
Absolutely.
Most of what happens in year two is your fault. Most of what happens in year two is your fault. And we're seeing coaches who take year two and make a big jump forward, and we're seeing coaches who can't really get off the ground.
Well, if you look at this roster and this team right now, in the offseason, had Auburn gone out and gotten a difference maker at quarterback? Had they done a better job in going after a left tackle in the portal?
If they had made the difficult decision.
Those two things, how much better would this team be right now?
I think after the Iron Bowl was close.
You would sure think that they would be a lot better.
After you got.
I'd say at least 4-3.
I do think, though.
Maybe 5-2.
I mean, if you're going to have to depend on, we've got to be better than you are to have a chance to win. Then that's sort of sad. I mean, I haven't been saying this that much, but I like the idea of a guy that has a chance of beating you if we're even. I feel like we've got I don't feel that with Auburn. I think Auburn's got to be better than the other team now to beat
them. Auburn does.
I don't think that the other team's going to get out coached. I haven't seen that.
No, you've seen
that's very That's more than uncomfortable.
You've seen the opposite.
That's a terrible feeling.
In all four of Auburn's winnable games,
I felt like
this year
they should have. When you have a should have, man, that's tough. When you have two, you go When you have four, there's a problem. That's, you know, as we said, it's not the same problem every time. So
Ferg did the numbers. I know we're way behind, but Ferg did the numbers on using probabilities of where Auburn's expected win percentages were at times during the, I guess if you get back to like the Iron Bowl, the fourth down of the Iron Bowl, right, and the Oklahoma game when Jarquez gets the first down, and Saturday after the Malcolm Simmons first down when you get to first and 10. Like Auburn's plus 90% on the ESPN.com probabilities machine.
Yeah, because you got first and goal up 11.
So you and Auburn was at a point where Auburn had a 99.9% chance of winning at least one of those three games using probabilities of where they were, like, because Auburn was at 93%, you know,
you saw the stat that they posted.
Which one?
The 105-1
with a 14-point lead in the last 20 years in the second half. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's 105-2.
Maybe that's why there was early celebrating on the, you know, maybe they knew that stat on the sideline and thought it was over.
We do need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Monday Drive.
And Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Again, we'd love to hear from you. I mean, everybody's, you know, trying to come up with answers.
Yeah.
I really don't
have any answers other than just win, baby. Come on.
That's exactly right. I mean, we've been saying it for a couple of weeks. I mean, that's the thing they need more than anything is just to get a win to believe they can win. That's right now got to be one of the toughest things, Brian, is just believing in themselves that we're going to win this ball game.
I don't believe it. So.
Well, no, I mean, it doesn't matter so much if you or I don't believe it or if the fans don't believe it.
Right.
But if the players don't believe it, then it's really, really difficult to get a win.
Although I think that, you know, as visible as some of the fourth down, as some of the fourth quarter problems have been, I mean, Auburn has also left opportunities on the table early in games, and we've seen that come back to haunt Auburn late. Like the reason some of these games were still close, right? Especially Oklahoma and Missouri. Like if you had done more to distance yourself in the first three quarters, I mean your offense scores 10 points. You have seven more from the special teams play, but if you do more offensively earlier in these games, then it's not going to come down to can you win that one drive at the end, or can you, you know, on one side of the ball or the other? And Auburn has in those moments, they've been outplayed and outcoached by the other team over these last couple of games as well. But no, it's tough, and it's there's not, as we said last week, it's not like you can point to one injury or two that doomed this either. Most of the guys you were looking at as key contributors on offense, there were a couple big hits Saturday. Peyton Thorne goes down with that and misses.
I was surprised he was back in a play, and it's a good thing he was, because he came in and threw as pretty a pass as you've seen him throw.
And then
to Cam Coleman.
And then Rivaldo.
The first play that he came back
the hit to Rivaldo that lays him out. And he's back in the game and being targeted on passes before the end. So it's, you know, seems like they're both okay, but huge collisions from both of those guys. But no, it doesn't it's made even tougher because you've been blessed by good health, I think, for the most part. Now Tuttle's been battling the knee injury or whatever, but I don't think injuries can be pointed to as a reason why this offense has failed to do enough in any of its games against major conference opponents this year.
No,
I don't think you can make.
Again, there's it hasn't just been one thing. It hasn't been the same thing. It has been, some of the same things, but they're just it's
execution critical moments. But there's so many different critical moments
and
so many different, you know, things that aren't being executed.
You know, Gus used to say that like a power running team earned that on third and fourth down and in the red zone. Like that's when you can. And so I would struggle to say, you know, we're talking about strengths of this offense. I would struggle to say that's a strength of this offense. And yeah, that's you know, some of that's on the offensive line. I think some of that's on offensive philosophy. You know, Hugh Freeze doesn't seem to be, and maybe when personnel changes he will. But at the moment, this is an offense sort of struggling with wanting to go fast against against struggling.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline here on this Monday afternoon. We're checking on a couple of things as we head toward the phone. Love to hear from you as we continue. Who have we got, Drew?
Tex.
All right. Is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
All right, man.
Yeah, Saturday was a rough one because my 5-year-old grandson wanted to know why I was so mad. and it's hard to explain to him. He couldn't tell if we won or not, so it really didn't mean a whole lot to him. Although he loves Aubie. Anyway, I charted all the plays after the missed touchdown pass.
Uh-huh.
And noticed a couple things. Number one, when we gave up the 78-yard pass play, they had 78 total yards passing and 21 attempts up to that point. And it was the same route that evidently they had run before.
Yeah, and Hugh Freeze talked about that today. Talked about that play today. That he said we had called the same defense we had called three times before and had executed perfectly. That time, the young corners just lined up a little off where they should have been, and that then resulted in them not having any leverage.
Yes. And then we get the ball back, and Peyton Thorne, after making a perfect throw for a touchdown that we don't make the play, compounds it by missing a wide-open Fairweather.
Yeah.
And then later on in the game, hangs him out to dry and almost gets him killed over the middle on a bad throw. So you were talking earlier about how things can multiply as they go on, and it just seemed like it kind of got – it gets a little out of hand because they're uncertain about, you know, whether or not, hey, can we close this game out? I also think, I'd like to see, I'll have to go back and look at it. It looked to me like we were in zone when they busted that play. And I don't think we were in zone the other time when they ran that play. Or it didn't appear that way. It was covered completely different. So, look, players have got to make plays. Coaches can only make certain calls. In the end, players have to make plays. So I thought back to anything in any ball game I'd ever been in my life, and we were playing Alabama, and if we win the second game of the doubleheader, back then we played a doubleheader, we end up winning the series. We've got about a 6-run lead, and they end up with two outs in the bottom of the ninth with David Magenden up, and we got him 0-2. He fouls four balls off, and our pitcher makes a perfect pitch, and he bangs it into about a foot in front of home plate, and it jumps over the first baseman's head. And they score two runs to beat us. And players make plays, and how long did Magenden play in the league?
Yeah,
double
quite
a while. Years?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so he's a player, and he made the play. I was over it by the time I started the boat up because there was nothing I could have done to change it. It does hurt. I think that we have a lack of leadership. And because the guy who has a C on his jersey doesn't continually make plays. And to me, leadership would go a long way with this team, especially with it being extremely young. So I don't know what the answer is. I think we're crazy if we kick the bucket and try and start all back over. It's, you know, did you read Deuce's article on another site? I'm sorry, Brian.
No, he's good.
Today, about his comment?
Basically, just be patient.
Just just be patient and trust. So I think that's what we're going to have to do. I just can't see him making the move. And, you know, it is hard to watch a 95-yard touchdown drive after the defense played so well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tex, can I ask, would your sentiment on that change if things collapsed this year? Because I don't think Auburn's really about making a move.
You mean collapse worse?
Yes.
Yeah. The team didn't care.
Like if these games were over at halftime.
If it looked more like 2012.
Possibly, but I still think I think there's some building blocks that have already been laid. By the way, I also looked at the targets. Coleman only got targeted twice. And now I understand that supposedly he doesn't run the right routes. You got to find a way to get him the football. There's got to be a way to get him the football. He's the best receiver we have. But I guess you can't say that because he doesn't run them. So now, are you
Keandre Lambert Smith's the best receiver Auburn has.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he didn't get targeted a lot either.
And I thought one of Thorne's more regrettable moments Saturday was the pass where he had a great pocket. And he bounces it to a pretty open Lambert Smith.
Yeah. Well, it's so when you say a collapse, do you mean losing the rest of the games?
Not necessarily. I think it's more in the team just looking like they don't care.
Well, again.
And yeah, we haven't seen that.
We haven't. Yeah, if we have leadership at the top, that shouldn't happen. And I mean leadership from the staff. I think that's controllable by the staff somewhat. But it would sure help if we would find a way to win this weekend and find some way to get over the hump.
Yep, no kidding.
Not go in. I mean, I watched Peyton in the post game, and he was calm, like we were 6-1 and got beat. I'd be pissed off, to be quite honest with you. I'd be yelling and screaming and hollering. We got to do better. I got to be better. It really didn't come across that way to me as him being a leader. And by the way, the ball he threw to Coleman was another beautiful ball. So he's got the ability. I'm not saying he doesn't have the ability, but he may not have the ability to do it in the big moments. I think we'd make a huge mistake running a coach off after 2 years. What does that say?
You're right.
What does that really say?
Well, Brian Harsin needs to go after 2 years, but
I said coach. Yeah. I think we have a coach.
Yeah. So. that is a little bit different. You're right. But yeah, Freeze, okay. The way Freeze is recruiting, you got to believe that eventually they're going to turn this thing around, or at least hope in that way, or feel some sort of positive in that way.
Well, I will tell you, the Allen Green and Harsin may be two of the worst hires we've ever made.
Allen Green in the news.
And who was the president?
Pitt, the new Pitt AD.
And who was
new,
the president? New, that got, new AD at Pitt. Runoff?
Was it?
Who, Leith?
Who was, yeah, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the new AD at the University of Pittsburgh, Allen Green.
Yeah. Hope they're enjoying the great season this year.
Yeah, that may be a better fit for him.
Maybe.
He may be a great administrator, but I look at what's going on. If you look at our sports everywhere else, so would you fire Butch Thompson after the year he just had?
Absolutely not.
Okay, you know, and it was. I won't say it was tragic, but didn't go quite the way they thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
No, but Auburn had been in the World Series two of the last 3 years.
That is correct. But the point being is if you think you got the guy, number one, I think we feel like we have the guy. Why did you bring him in if you didn't think he was the guy? And I think he gives us much, much more than the previous guy will ever give anything other than, well, never mind. I almost said something that I shouldn't say. much, much more than he could have ever given Auburn University. So, and one last thing, I just thought of this. by the way, my daughter-in-law was yelling, why don't they turn around on defense when the ball's being thrown? And all I could think of is, I wonder what Shadow would be saying today.
Oh, man.
So, sorry. Man, didn't mean to drop that in.
Nah, at least seven or eight phone calls a week.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, Dan, I'm not for changing coaches. I think you give him 4 years.
I would say at the moment, I would be against making a move. I'm with you. I'm in your camp, and it would take a lot more for me to want to change my mind.
Yep. All right, guys. Hey, appreciate y'all being there. It gives everybody a chance to vent, get it all off our chest. I'm going to hit stuff.
Thanks. All right, be careful.
All right.
All right. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, Lee County. Chris Patton here to ask you for your vote for Lee County District Court Judge this November. Lee County District Court handles traffic.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final minute or so of hour number one. Let's get things started with Specter. Hey, Specter.
Specter, we'll give you more time after the after the break if you hang on. Oh, there's the music. There's the music. Good hearing from you, Specter.
Hey, great call. Serious? Did the music start right then? All right, Specter. I want to give you plenty of time.
We
ran a little long with
Best
text
call
there.
Today.
Thanks for the call, Specter.
No. Specter can hang on and be up first when we come back for hour number two here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of The Drive. Yep, one of these days. We're going to do the if you could hear in the breaks.
Yeah. We might get that far.
Yeah.
We might bleed into that conversation.
Because you made a really interesting because you know we could like podcast the other
the paywall.
Show. Yeah.
The secret the secret drive. Between the commercial break stuff.
Yeah. All right. We're here with you to want to hear from you. Give us your thoughts. And you can go ahead and vent with us. Bill, Dan, yep. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in hour number two of the Monday Drive. Second hour of the show brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika on the web at orthoclinic.com.
You can also text the show we're not jumping on the phone number yet.
I wanted to know.
I have a different promotion lined up first. Let's remind people. Because you're going to talk about the Skybar, the phone number in a second.
Yes.
Let's let people know that this Friday we're going to be live at Skybar doing the show on location, helping kick off their Halloween festivities for the weekend. They got a costume contest that night. One of two costume contests they're doing during Halloween season is this Friday night. So we'll be live on the patio from 4 to 6 doing the show. Really enjoyed our time. Thanks to and Bud Light setting that up. By the way, really appreciate Bud Light getting us over.
Yeah, we were at the New Oregle Supper Club on Friday.
Oh right. Man,
nice.
Fabulous!
We were there before tip off of Tumors.
Thursday.
I bet you had a great view of it.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. No, you got to check that place out.
Great view, period. I mean, it is absolutely
fifth floor of the rooftop of the Graduate Hotel downtown. Nice. But we'll be right next door at Skybar, right. Courtesy of our friends at Bud Light.
And Skybar, of course, is the sponsor of the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390. Inspector has been hanging since before the top of the hour. Hey, Specter, thanks for holding on.
Hey, Specter.
Hey, I got gray hair now. Listen, who you got here today? Brian Matthews, right?
I am here, yes.
Okay, I had Jason Caldwell on the hot seat last week.
Uh-oh.
But listen, he couldn't answer my question. But here again, we just cannot find a way to win a game.
They can find ways to not win games, though.
Yep, that's exactly right, Bill. My question to you, Brian.
Yes.
Since you're on that end of the media side that sees Coach all the time, or not all the time, but most of the time, why hasn't anyone asked the critical questions? Why aren't we playing at least our freshmen and getting people in there that to replace people that can't get the job done? I ain't talking about Peyton Thorne. I'm talking about people that can't catch a touchdown pass that goes right through their fingertips. Why is he playing? And things like that. I just don't understand why we are. I tell you what, offensive line, I'll start with them. I give them a D-minus for this game. They could not give Charquez any running room. The only time he was successful when he caught a pass from Peyton Thorne on the sidelines. We have, I think, about 10 freshmen linemen, and a number of juniors, and I cannot understand why we're not giving these guys playing time. Okay, we hear about it all the time. They don't have the experience. Well, how in the world is a football player going to get experience if he doesn't get in the game? You don't get experience in on the practice field.
You get some, but it's not the same. Okay. You're absolutely right. Very interesting. I thought that Hugh Freeze brought up a couple of defensive guys today. He said, we've got some young guys over there. He mentioned T.J. Lindsey and D.J. Reed saying, maybe we ought to put them in there on third down because they'll be fresh legs. Right. Well, yeah, maybe you can do that with other guys.
I'm not sure either one was on the at Missouri.
I'm not sure they were either.
I don't know. But the answer to your question is why they're not playing more freshmen. The answer to that question, now I'm not saying that I disagree or agree with this, but the answer is they're playing the players that perform the best in practice that they feel give them the best chance to win. They are trying to win every single game left on Auburn's schedule. That's why. Now, you can disagree or agree with that, but that's the reason why.
Now, one thing – Go ahead, Spector.
It sounds like to me we have a lot of Jeremy Johnsons on the practice field.
Maybe.
Jeremy Johnson could not perform in a game, but he was ace number one on the practice field. So, how are you going to know if you don't put him out there?
Oh, you're right, Spector, and especially after you've lost four games in a row like Auburn has, maybe you need to make some changes like that and find out if other guys.
Maybe DeAndre Carter needs a chance.
Right. Yeah,
that offensive line performed really poorly. He's a talented freshman.
It really did. So I mean,
I don't know if he's ready though.
Because that's the something else we were talking about during the commercial break, Spector, is that's a lot of these reasons you might get for these, they feel like reasons that would fit a lot more in year one. Right, if you're talking about
if you're winning,
But if you're talking about he doesn't really feel great about what else is on the roster other than the starter at a certain position. It's like he recruited the other guys. You're talking about single digit players left over from Harsin at this point on the team, right? I mean, it's pretty. I mean, especially if we're talking about guys who play.
Heavy majority of these players were brought in by Hugh Freeze.
I mean, and so that's a and I would now. We have seen a willingness to play freshmen at various positions, which would make me
statistically, Auburn leads the nation in minutes played defensively by freshmen. Right. They lead the SEC in minutes played by freshmen on offense.
On both sides.
So the other answer might be where you're not seeing freshmen, they really feel like those freshmen can't contribute right now.
Well, how is those seniors working out for you?
That's a good point.
Nothing's working out right now, right?
That's a great point.
It's just one of those things, but I'm not saying I disagree with you in certain areas, and I think as we move forward, as we've seen with DeMarcus Riddick, as we've seen with Jay Crawford and Kinsley Lauter-Fauston, and who did you say, Malik Blockton, almost from the first of the season, but it continues to grow there. You're going to see more and more guys get more opportunities. We haven't seen maybe the same on offense.
You're seeing
it
more with D.J. Durkin than you are on the offensive side. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know if there's frustration from if you asked me to single out candidates, I'd wonder about because the offensive struggles. You would think it's the guys. Whether it's behind Thorne or the receivers that aren't getting on the field other than the starters. I would wonder if those are spots where because that's really your last. I mean, you mentioned the offensive line, but there aren't that many places where they haven't tried some younger players where it seems like they might do that between now and the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, Malcolm Simmons is playing more as the season goes on, right? I mean, he's a big part of the offense now, a key part.
But you make good points, Spector. I wish we had better answers.
Well, listen, let me get on defense here. You know, I saw Jay Thompson. He's senior, right?
Oh, Bug Thompson, number one. Yeah.
Yeah, Jaren Thompson. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I've seen him do a freshman move on a receiver, followed him all the way down the field with his back to the quarterback, never turned his head around because the football hit him in the back of the head.
Hit him in the helmet. That's right.
Yes. And so if he had just been looking back, it would have been an easy pick for him. Also, I saw Thompson try to take an open field tackle down on a running back by hitting him with his shoulder instead of grabbing his legs, keeping him from moving anywhere else. Of course, there were some more guys on here. There were a number 14 on offense. Peyton was a quarterback keeper. He faked the handoff to Jarquez, and he ran around left end. And Thompson, I mean, not Thompson, but
Lewis,
number 14. I can't think of his name.
That's Robert Lewis.
Lewis, the receiver, transferred to Georgia State.
Terrific kid. Instead of going after the linebacker like he should have, he's sitting there watching the play develop by Peyton, and he just stood there and watched the play as Peyton got tackled on the line of scrimmage. But it's stuff like that we're not the players aren't executing, and I don't know if they don't know the playbook or if the coaches are at fault here. It's just, and again, I saw Peyton didn't like the call that the coach called in, and we had a critical waste of a timeout in the second half, and he went to the sideline. Of course, he got chewed out. You could read the lips like he said. Coach was saying, "Why don't you just run the play?" And it seems like Peyton is wants to run the team. And hell, if he's going to leave him out there, tell him to go out there and run the team. Just run the play you think you should be running.
It's strange to see. And not to read too much into the sideline exchanges, because what's happening on the field is more important. But still, it feels like there's been a disconnect, right? It's been an odd fit from moment one. But a point we were talking about during the break, Spector.
I want to see Hugh Freeze with other quarterbacks. I just wonder if it's something, because you look. I remember seeing Nick Saban. I've seen Lane Kiffin. Some coaches are like that, but yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem like,
and the fit goes beyond Peyton. It feels like there's a disconnect between what Hugh Freeze wants the offense to be and the players he has on the offense right now.
Yeah,
I got one question for y'all before y'all go. I just tuned in when Sunshine was on the radio and he was going off. Do you have anything interesting to say?
I did not that I can recall right off the top of my head, Spector.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry I missed his call. I'm sure I would have commented on what he said.
All right,
guys, that's all I got.
Appreciate the call, Spector. 334-321-1390. Who do we have up next? Napoleon? Hey, Napoleon.
Yeah, hey, guys. Yes. Spector talks about other people being long-winded.
Really?
Anyway, I researched it, and I truly think this team is in danger of going 2-10. Honestly, I do.
ULM they're no slouch.
The coach of the year.
They're really good this year. And
Sunbelt coach of the year, Brian Vincent.
I researched it. We've had 12 seasons since 1904 that have had two or less wins at Auburn, and since 1952, we have never won less than three games. If we go 2-10, that's going to be...
That'll be the worst season since 1950, because those other seasons, they only played 10 or 11 games.
Exactly. So, basically, in modern football, it would be Auburn's worst season ever.
This is, and Brian and I were talking about this before we came on, this is the worst stretch of football for Auburn since 1946 through 1950.
And it's been surreal for me as well, enduring it, and it's been heartbreaking every year, and Auburn people are just made of different stuff. That's why we keep going to every game and keep donating, and we'll keep doing it, but we deserve better. I do want to say, you may need to take a long look at his offensive line coach, because let me say this. Those guys, and it's not just Percy, I know he gets picked on a lot, as well he should, but those guys look lost a lot. They don't know what they're doing a lot of the time. And that's a problem.
I would agree with that. I've been very
disappointed with the offensive line.
They look lost. Yeah. I don't think it's an ability thing, and I don't think it's an effort thing. But from, they don't know who they're supposed to block. When, heaven forbid, a defense does a stunt or a blitz, they have
even
no
a
clue
shift
where to go or what to do.
Just a simple shift on the first play
or
of the game.
Twist. Oh dear God, they panic.
Yep.
That he needs to take a long look at that, and what he said today about juggling the play calling and the recruiting. He needs to make a decision, one or the other, and stick to it. And I think he needs to go recruiting, obviously, and get a stud offensive coordinator. That's all I got, guys. It's great talking to y'all again. Dan, love you, buddy. Take care.
Appreciate it, Napoleon. Absolutely. Great stuff. And I do wonder, if there was an offensive coordinator fully in charge of this who wasn't the head coach, you get the feeling he'd be under a lot of pressure right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Auburn had brought in an offensive coordinator after Philip Montgomery, and they'd
might have been fired after this last game.
Oklahoma did.
Yeah. If Auburn had an offensive coordinator who was not the head coach, who was taking full responsibility for this offense, I think that there's a good chance it would have been really tough, right? I mean, after these five performances against major conference opponents and a lot of places it's offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean we'll see what happens this offseason.
All right, Jeremy is up next on the drive. Hey, Jeremy, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, hey guys. I thought your last caller might tiptoe into this. It's not even the balancing of the play calling versus recruiting. It's they're not there in the room. I didn't hear it. But it just sounds like he's taken aback by how hard it's going to be to actually recruit and be involved in the play calling and do all of these things. And I'm just thinking, you're making that comment coming off of a bye week when you had extra time to do all the things that you needed to do to get ready.
And to hear it discussed like it's not possible. Right. Like it. I mean, that's not to look. I did rewatch Mad Men recently, and I don't want to quote Don Draper often, but that's what the money's for. You know what I mean, Jeremy?
Well, and not even that. The coach at Louisiana Monroe is doing the exact same thing that you're doing. He doesn't get paid the way that you do. Your assistant coaches are doing the exact same thing you're doing. They don't get paid the way you do. I don't even want to make it about the money. It's just a part of the job. If you're getting paid $60,000 a year to do that job, it's part of the job.
Yeah, and if you can't handle it, then you do what Tony Bennett did.
It almost seems like he is surprised at how hard this is sometimes. Guys, I don't know. Like I said, we had an off week, and we had the ball 12 times and had 6 three and outs.
Yep. And a 4 and out.
Yeah. And another time where you did not get a first down.
All right. Let me go ahead and read out part of that quote
we've
talked about here. It was a question about it started out as a question about the play calling. But he said, this morning we're trying to get the basics of the Kentucky plan in, and we've got a stream of players that I want to see and spend time with. That's been in and out, and I've been in and out, and I'm pretty clear with the guys and what I think we can do. I think we're all in agreement and alignment on that. Then he talks a little bit about what happened in the game and some of the things. Then he goes on to say, this profession has gotten to where you feel like you're lifting weights and there's an added 45 dumbbells every day with something else, whether it's the transfer world or an academic or discipline issue or family issue the kid is having. When you're a relational staff like we are, they feel the comfort level. Let me go see Coach Freeze. So that is a lot. I enjoy being part of trying to figure out how to get this offense, along with Coach Nixon, Coach Austin, Coach Davis, Coach Thornton, all those guys that are in there with our analyst crew, to be efficient and to find a way to put games away. Really, like we had one of our better drives of the year at the end of the third quarter. We just got to finish that drive, and the game is probably over. I think there's another quote in there, too.
Yeah, there was another one where he was talking about re-recruiting.
Like different pieces.
You know, not just recruiting, but re-recruiting his own roster.
I find that one, too.
Right.
Sure. But, look, you came out of the off week. The very first kickoff to us, like, it's things like that. Like, we haven't told our kickoff guys, put your damn hand up in the air.
We talked about that last week. I know. It's like you just know it's coming. My wife, again, I know we're going to get into that, you know, the women understanding football, but, I mean, kickoff starts going to the end zone. She's going, get away from it.
And it's a bunch of little things, guys. But it just makes you wonder, like, what? We had the conversation when we hired him. You know, do you want a recruiter? Do you want a football? Like, I'm always going to be the guy that says, I want somebody that is into the nuts and bolts of his football team for every aspect of it. And this, Hugh Freeze is not. He is detached from the actual football part of this football team.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think he's a great recruiter, and I think he's into this football team. It's just not working what he's doing right now. I don't think he's detached.
I just wonder if he is able to take what he has and adjust.
Well, I think that's a problem, yes.
I mean, but that's something that you...
That's a problem a lot of coaches have, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
Good stuff, Jeremy. Appreciate the phone call.
I got it.
We're running behind. Need to get to our first break of hour number two. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Monday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian with Drew at the controls, and right back to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Really enjoying this show. Your prior caller, he said Coach Freeze isn't engaged with football only. I can't imagine that's even possible. He's having to balance egos and NIL and retaining players. If the coach could only concentrate on football, his job would be quite a bit easier, I would think. But I imagine there's other ancillary aspects of his job that require his attention. I don't envy what he's going through. But real quick, I just had a couple points, guys. I agree with Tex. I'm on board with giving Freeze at least 4 years. I think you got to give this guy time. But the two questions, and I know Brian goes to practice, but does this coaching staff actually practice situational football in practice? And two other quick points. My only fear is the longer this losing goes on, the more difficult it's going to be to break because you've installed a losing culture. Mm-hmm. None of your upperclassmen actually know how to win. So when we talk about leadership, none of these guys have ever won. And one final thought, I love Coach Freeze's candor, but just looking at it from the outside, and I'd like to get Brian's comments on this, his candor, sometimes he's so candid that it breeds a lack of confidence that he actually has answers to the problems he's facing. And yeah. So I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on my comment.
First of all, they definitely practice situational football. Maybe not necessarily. We only go once a week, and it's probably 10 to 15, sometimes 20 minutes. Every once in a while, they'll let us be out there for a while. But, yeah, that's a big part of practice, and that's the case with every college team. You have to practice situational football. And, you know, it's one of those things, and I don't know everything that goes on around, you know, on the practice field, but it just seems like they'll practice something over and over and think they have it down, and for whatever reason they get in the game and it doesn't work. Or this team does something they weren't expecting and they're just unable to make that adjustment, at least right away. What was the other question?
About you know, his candor and
yes.
and I don't disagree with that. I mean he has pretty much said he's looking for answers.
Yeah. I think a couple of things on his candor. Number one, he is very candid about what happens on this play or that play or what goes wrong, and that can be interpreted as him blaming his players. When I think you just sees it as him just explaining, well, this happened on this play. But I understand where people would interpret the other way and where people get a negative feeling about that. And I think the other thing is, I think people right now, when Auburn's playing the way they are, want to see their coach angry, want to see them sort of banging mm-hmm. on the table or something, showing more emotions, you know, and it's unacceptable, you know. That type of stuff in a lot of ways. And I just don't think you freeze, even though he said some things like that after the game against Missouri. I just don't think that's his
that's not his personality.
Yeah,
no.
It's not. He's more of a – he's pretty calm.
Yeah.
And he's very talkative, and he goes through things. He explains them. And I just think people are used to coach speak more.
Yeah, I think you're right. 334-321-1390. Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys, a couple calls ago, y'all were talking about catching the ball in the end zone on the kickoff.
Yeah.
Did you talk about the holding? It kind of broke out.
The holding on the return, the opening kickoff return?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Me and my daughter were talking about the game Friday night, and we were jokingly said, well, you know, we're going to hold on the kickoff. So
yeah, it's got to be a half the distance.
And it happens almost every single game.
Right. If you just let it hit end zone or you call fair catch, you get on the 25.
And if you feel like, and if you feel like maybe officials have it in for you, then don't, then just don't return it.
Right. Just take it on
take
the 25.
Take the ball on the 25.
Better yet, just tell them, look, get out there and do it 100 times in a day. Get the walk-ons out there. Run do 100 kickoffs, and just tell them, look, hit them in the front. Don't grab. Don't hit them in the back.
I agree.
Have they made? Hold on a sec, Bill. You track this. Have they made personnel changes on special teams much
this
year?
Not really. It's pretty much. I think offense on the kickoff returns. I think are the exact same folks they've had all year.
Brett, is it a surprise that a group is penalty laden? As that hasn't seen much shakeup personnel-wise?
It's shocking, Dan. And for a team that we struggle, struggle to score points, we held on the opening kickoff. They punted it to us. We caught it on their side of the field. We held, so moved back 10 yards. And then up 17-3, we kicked the ball out of bounds.
Kickoff, yeah, I mean, you're right.
On a drive that would have finished
us in a run.
You would have finished Missouri off. A three and out on that drive finishes Missouri off. Instead they score points.
Start at the 35.
And the reason they're able to get the reason they're able to make that comeback at the end is because they were able to score 6 points with Drew Pine in the game.
Well, I'm not going to complain about play calling, because when you call a play, you know, there's four or five guys out for it. It's not just like they said, throw it to this guy. I mean, somebody makes that decision on the field. But it's the small thing, the easy things. You know, do not hold on a kickoff. I mean, that ought to be, before they run out on the field, there ought to be three coaches getting in front of everybody's face. Okay, don't hold. Don't hold. Do not hold. Or you will not do this again. I mean, I don't think that's too hard to do.
Yeah. That's a good point. Another thing I would say, with everything that seems to go wrong with this team, why not just fair catch it or let it bounce the end zone and eliminate that one area where you can't screw it up
mm-hmm.
and just take the ball in 25
exactly.
every time and try not to get sacked on the opening play.
Yeah, who's that kid that catches every punt according to coach for Will Upton?
Yeah.
Get Will Upton back there to fair catch. Yeah. Give him some practice.
All right. Well, Dan, at least we got the Dodgers right now.
Oh, man. Still. Can't wait for
that.
Friday night's going to be awesome.
I don't like taking this long a break. in between.
I believe Fox.
And going into November now.
Well, I think it's because they had to save room for the game sevens if they got to that, right?
Well, Fox sets the days for the World Series back in the spring, I guess, for TV. And how about this? Fox set up back in the spring, Fox set up the Rutgers-USC game thinking, in case the Dodgers or the Yankees are in the World Series, we'll have Rutgers or USC leading into or as the lead out from the first World Series game. Instead you have them both. You have the Dodgers and the Yankees in the World Series. So you're gonna have USC Rutgers on Fox. It's after the World Series game. They go to USC Rutgers for some late night football.
And this is the most played World Series the two opposing teams in history.
And how about this one?
They've played the most.
The first time.
Either this or Yanks Cardinals.
Do you know this one, Bill? The first time the league leaders in home runs are playing each other in the World Series since Mantle versus Snyder.
Wow.
Back in the 50s.
That's a great stat.
There you go, Dan. Stat. All right. Y'all have a great evening.
All right. Appreciate the call, Brent. Let's get to our bottom of the hour break, and then we'll be right back with more of your phone calls for the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and let's get right back to the phones. Jerry is up first. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
All right.
Good. I just wanted to point out an offensive line problem that I've noticed is they're too slow.
Auburn really struggles in pass pro. I mean, when other teams feel like they know Auburn's going to pass, it is tough.
What's the what is officially they saw enough in Percy Lewis to just decide after three plays?
I saw his PFF was a two.
Yeah. Oh boy! So they saw. Oh man! Again, coming off a bye week too, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
Defensive ends are beating them to
oh,
to
no
spot.
Kidding. There have been way too many times when there hasn't been any contact with those guys, where they've just come through completely untouched.
Yeah.
They just can't move their feet.
Yeah, so, I mean, they made a change quickly there. It still wasn't great. And that's where, you know, a caller a while ago, I don't disagree, Brian. I mean, if you've got maybe time to look at some of those young guys. Try some others at tackle, maybe, you know, because it seemed like Auburn has a bunch of guys that look like they have potential to be good at guard, good inside.
I think tackle's an issue.
Yes.
With the starters and with the depth.
Mm-hmm.
And even with some guys coming in, I don't see a lot of real tackles in that group. So that's got to be addressed.
And we haven't seen Tyler Johnson or Ronan in a while.
No. Ronan was just a depth piece, and then he ended up playing early.
A really good tackle.
Golly, no kidding. Absolutely a must.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it, Jerry. From Jerry to Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right. How are you doing, man?
I'm hanging. Been a while. All the air is out of me, guys. I mean, I don't even know. I've heard all the comments. Where else do we go?
Yeah, I mean, you can't sign any free agents right now or make any deals.
Making a trade,
I can really
make a trade right now.
And even and Jeff, even you know, as I said earlier in the show, I think what's additionally disappointing is that on a team that has so many seniors in key roles, even if you make progress these last five games, and it is, an if the size of the Grand Canyon as to whether or not this offense is going to make significant progress, even if you do it, you're doing it with the guys that aren't going to be on the team next year because they're out of eligibility, and how much of that can you carry over into the offseason?
Yeah, no doubt. It's just, you know, I said a few weeks ago, and I used a word which I don't even believe in, but I'm accepting of. We're snake bit. Nothing. I'm sitting there listening and watching. It's almost like you're watching what you knew is going to come. The bad part is coming. It's coming. And I saw that in the Missouri game.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I saw that on that on that drive, and I'm listening to Andy and Jason call it. And I feel sorry for those guys. They seem like they're just drained.
It's miserable having to try to do that and still keep up a good face. Somebody wrote this the other day, and I've been saying this for a couple of weeks, that really it's awful when you feel like Auburn football is Charlie Brown. I mean, yeah. Lucy's going to pull that ball away. It's coming. Doesn't matter how many times she promises she's going to. It's like, oh God, here it comes.
I knew it. On the 4th and 5. I called this. I said, they're going to run a quick out to the receiver. And I'm listening. I said, no. On that 4th and 5 where they converted. And sure enough, what did they do? Quick out to the receiver. Oh, my goodness. I said, that's the ball game. I knew. I said, we will not stop them.
Yeah, I texted both my sons one word. When that pass was in the game.
Oh, I thought it was, and maybe this is the pessimist in me. I mean, I've seen too many sports movies where Brady Cook just coming on the field.
Yeah.
Just Brady Cook coming back on the field, right? It's like, I mean.
Golly, and then beating you with his legs a couple of times,
yes,
too.
He did. Yes, he did. He, you know, that dude had to go to the hospital. Not the training room. They had to go to the hospital and, like, check to make sure, you know, he didn't need surgery, and he's coming back on that leg and running for a first down in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's beyond painful. Painful is not even an appropriate word anymore. It's just numbness.
Yeah.
Numbness goes beyond pain to me now. I don't even get bewildered anymore, upset. It's just, gosh. Yeah. Maybe there's a tomorrow. That's all I could say.
I hope so.
Well, they're going to keep showing up and playing. I don't know what's going to happen, but.
Like a lot of the guys, I know we're on the recruiting. What is Coach going to say tonight on Tiger Talk? What is there to say?
Pretty much the same old.
Yeah, a lot of it speaks for itself on the field, right? You can have perfect answers to these questions, but if it looks like that on Saturday. It's not gonna stop the bleeding I think it would be more disappointing if it felt like it was a purely a talent issue, right? No, I take that back. It would be less disappointing if it felt like it was just a talent issue because you feel like you could fix that in recruiting. But I think what you've seen, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill. Some of the stuff you've seen in these losses feels like even with a more talented team, right? You're not gonna have. I mean, you're not gonna feel as confident as you did a couple of weeks ago if this team significantly
the more it happens, the more you're almost waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Yeah, we're losing to the teams that Oklahoma has checked out, and we lose to that team.
Yeah,
Arkansas, God bless them. You know they played hard. We lose to that team.
Cal is Florida State's one win.
Yes.
Yeah. Florida State is 1-6, and they beat Cal at home.
Cal's feeling pretty snake bit, too. They got that win here. But
they're still winning Twitter, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're snake bitten there, but, oh, my God. Well, I see the sun setting, so the sun is set on us, so maybe it'll rise again tomorrow. So I appreciate it, guys.
Here's hoping, Jeff. Yeah. Yep. Appreciate it. Good hearing from you.
We got Little Orphan Annie on the phone next, Bill.
Well, we went from Jerry to Jeff. I was thinking, is Walker going to be next? I mean, but no. We actually have Slack. Hey, Slack.
Oh, wow. The Hall of Famer calling. What's up, Slack?
What's up, guys?
Slack, what do you think?
It's been a while. I could say it's a lack of talent. I could easily say that. And to me, the most disappointing so far with the season is the upperclassmen are not producing. And we got a lot of transfers that came in that had high potential. But I guess that's why they were in the transfer portal, because they're not producing here either.
Yep. Kendra Lambert-Smith has been terrific.
They wasn't producing at the schools they were at, so.
I don't know.
So do we stop going to the transfer portal? I don't think so.
I don't think you can. I mean, because your roster's not going to be, you know, exactly what you want just from recruiting.
If you retain, the guys that you hope to retain, I think the hope is that you'll rely less and less on. Like you won't have as many in the starting lineup. But no, I feel like you could identify multiple spots where it feels like Auburn's going to be shopping at the you hope they're shopping at the top of the market.
They need to go portal, quality over quantity. They really do. I don't care if there's a 70-man roster or 75. Doesn't matter. They need to stop with this.
The best quarterback, the best left tackle.
One and two.
If that's not at the top of your list and you don't give every nickel that you can.
And number three's got to be another pass rusher.
Yes.
Because they don't have anybody proven coming back. And maybe Keyron Crawford, he's got potential. We can see that.
If you get an impact pass rusher, he ain't doing it right now.
Maybe he turns the corner and is a real good player next year, but he ain't there yet.
Problem is there's also 35 to 40 other power conference teams that are shopping.
Want those same three spots.
Those are premier positions. You got to really go after them. You got to be first, and you got to come strong.
And so why let Auburn get them? Because we don't want Auburn to ever get back where they need to be. Think that doesn't play a part in it?
It may. Tell you what, Auburn Auburn needs to get back to, they'd love to get back to where they were not too long ago. But, I mean, the problem is it's getting longer and longer it's amazing the job that Hugh Freeze and his staff are doing recruiting. These kids that they're recruiting now were in the seventh grade last time Auburn had a winning season.
God, that's hard to believe. that's tough.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about.
I kept hearing them make reference to that Saturday during the ball game. We had to beat a ranked team in
16 years.
Bo Nix beating Ole Miss in Harsin's first year.
Right, last one over.
Which I believe was almost exactly 3 years ago.
I think it's 14 straight.
0-13 against
now 14.
Yeah.
14 now?
I believe it was 13 before Missouri.
Missouri is the 14th consecutive loss to a ranked opponent by Auburn. And it's crazy to think. Like if you think about like an 18-year-old, like what their knowledge is of Auburn football and what their knowledge is of Auburn basketball, because so much of it is shaped by the last 6-7 years. And
somebody 5-6 years ago, 6-7, you go back, say 2017, what people were thinking about either program is like basketball's, you're hoping you get somewhere with Bruce Pearl, and football, it's like, well, we've won two national championships.
How lucky was I to be
a national championship, played for another one.
How lucky was I to be a student from 85 to 90.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's the plot of Freaky Friday in a lot of ways, Slack.
Can you blame a lot of this on just bad hires in the last few years?
Oh, yeah. I think you can look back at leadership decisions, and I'm not just talking about head coaches. I'm talking about ADs, and I'm talking about presidents going all the way back to BOT. If you want to really start pointing fingers, there's been complete mismanagement of the football program, and it goes all the way back to decisions that were made 4, 5, 6 years ago by the people that run this university.
And one of the things that's really distressing, Slack, is that you don't really see college football coaches pull out of an early – there aren't a lot of college football coaches right now where you say, yeah, they really struggled in the first 2 years, and then they pulled out of it and won a lot. Like, I mean, you could kind of say that about Dabo. You know, they took a step back in his first full year, but there aren't very many. You know, you could say that about, you know, where it was rocky after the first 2 years and they're winning now. Like that's not the trajectory of most of the guys who are successful this day and age.
Yeah, although things have changed so much the last few years that it's hard to compare anything now.
But usually when you have the right guy, you see signs of life in those first 2 years on the field, right? You think about Tennessee struggled, Heupel shows up there, they've got a pretty good idea. They got the right guy. You know, the other schools. I mean, Colorado with Deion, right? Like there are examples of this where you see signs of life pretty early on that Auburn isn't seeing right now.
Yeah. One last thing. I guess it's easy to say, but we got a young man that's playing quarterback at the University of Miami right now. And last time I remember, it came down between Auburn and Miami. And I'm assuming Auburn decided not to pay him whatever he wanted.
That's correct.
As a transfer in the NIL.
Yep. Right. I think you're right on.
If you terrible go back mistake and look, in hindsight,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, you think that's a terrible mistake.
Oh, no question. I can't imagine anybody not saying that.
And do you think that the brokers with the university made that decision and put Coach Freeze in that
situation? No. That was Coach Freeze's decision. He had the opportunity, if he really wanted to go after quarterback. He made the decision that he would rather
stick with what he had and try to get some other players.
Okay. All right, appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate the call, Slack. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Steve, hold on. You're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Born and raised in Lee County.